Today on Movie Rollers, we talk about Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri and Roman J. Israel, Esquire. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And here's D as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Hello.
Hello.
I might completely butchered the intro to this podcast. I might put it in as an outtake at the end because...
You should.
Both these movies have such... There's so many syllables.
Unwieldy titles, but...
My word. I don't think I could remember them, never mind, like, spell them or read them. So, yeah, a lot to... well, I guess we should jump straight into our reviews because, again, I think we're doing a little bit of a catch-up today. We've recorded a number of podcasts and we just haven't been able to stay on top of our Netflix picks. There's plenty out there. Go dig them out.
We are watching movies against the clock at the minute.
All the way through between now and the end of award season, I think it's going to be a wonderful time for everyone that loves movies. I kind of annoyed that the studios have held so much back.
So much.
Because this was a very dry year. And we probably say this every year, but there is always this big push by the studios to throw things into theatres, and they're all fighting for air because they want to get considered in awards.
I feel like we've got as many movies to watch between October, November and December than we have
from January to October.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, clearly the awards game is important to Hollywood, but I feel like they're doing themselves a bit of a disservice because, you know, we're struggling with one or two comic book movies for the entirety of summertime. And, you know, here we are with many, many riches. So let's get on with our reviews. We've got two to talk about today. Where would you like to start?
You choose.
All right. Well, I'm going to talk about Roman J. Israel.
Then we shall too.
Esquire. So this movie is the latest vehicle, really, for Denzel Washington. He got the Oscar last year, didn't he, for Fences?
Yes.
Right?
No, not for Fences. He did not.
Okay. He was nominated. I should know that.
Yeah. He wasn't happy about it.
That's right. Yes. That's right. No, that's a very memorable. Yeah, that's too bad. But he is back here again with another lead role. He got nominated. He did get the Oscar for.
He's got nominated twice. He got the best actor for Training Day and best supporting actor for Glory. So he has two Oscars.
Right. Yeah. No. So he's not Oscar free, but nonetheless. So very briefly, this comes from director Dan Gilroy and is ostensibly the story of a character who my Rotten Tomatoes page has disappeared on me, so
it's you're struggling.
I am indeed. Yeah, no, it's funny because I had everything lined up in front of me. I pressed something on my computer and it went away. So I'll read its description here, which is: Roman J. Israel, Esquire is a dramatic thriller set in the underbelly of the overburdened Los Angeles criminal court system. Denzel Washington stars as a driven, idealistic defense attorney whose life is upended when a series of turbulent events challenge the activism that has defined his career. Colin Farrell co-stars as the ambitious, moneyed lawyer who recruits Roman to his firm. Starring in this movie, obviously, is Denzel and Colin Farrell. We have supporting roles by Shelley Henning, Carmen Ejogo, and Tony Planner. So, what did you think of Roman J. Israel, Esquire?
So, Dan Gilroy's previous movie was Nightcrawler, which he also wrote and directed, which we all loved. And the San Diego Film Critics Society was particularly very...
Complimentary.
I mean, it won best movie and best actor and best director. So there was a lot. I personally had a lot of expectation from this particular movie. And it did not quite meet them. I was convinced while I was watching most of the movie that this is based on a true story, because the Denzel Washington character is so... stylized and so over the top that I figured you would only dare to do this if somebody actually existed like so. And again, he's somebody who appears to be on the autistic spectrum, potentially. But then I was kind of, when I found out this was a work of fiction written by Dan Gilroy, I kind of felt, oh, they've taken too many liberties. I don't know. There was something about this movie which rubbed me the wrong way. I didn't care for it. There's a lot of things which didn't work for me.
So I love Denzel Washington in this, and what a different Colin Farrell to the one that we just saw in The Killing of a Sacred Deer or The Lobster. But overall, this came off more like a late 70s, 80s episode of like NYPD Blue or Quincy or Law and Order than a current day movie. That's not to say I didn't find it enjoyable in the moment. I think it's entertaining. It just didn't really make sense overall, and I don't think it concluded very satisfactorily. And we could talk more about that.
Yeah. What did you think?
Yeah, you know, in the moment, I kind of liked it. I mean, I think it wears its contrivances well. You know, I think, you know, there are some things that the character does feel very forced. He has the way that he's almost encyclopedic about law, you know, is odd. It feels a little, you know, there's an artificiality to the whole thing. But in the moment, that didn't seem to matter all that much. So, yeah, it's kind of hard to know what to make of it all. But again, I'll repeat what I just said, which is, you know, it feels fine in the moment. There's something believable about its universe. I think the performance here is what makes it. Denzel, in his last couple of movies, has been, I don't know, I mean, he's always been a fine actor, not one that I've been particularly a fan of, but there's a subtlety to some of the scenes that he brings here that I think it's very hard for an actor to do believably. There are just a couple of moments of dialogue where he reacts in a very natural way that reminds me of just how solid an actor Denzel is. And I think that's really, you know, for me, the takeaway from this movie is, again, it becomes another vehicle for Denzel to show us what he can do. But yeah, it's meandering, kind of plodding, like the dog that's just gone upstairs in Yazzie's house here.
Yeah, I mean, make no mistake. I mean, I will certainly be putting Denzel on my think list for best actor. I mean, I do like that this stuff. So this had a lot of promise for me. I think this is the thing that you might have been talking about, Yazdi. I like that it starts to question current sentencing processes and maybe even undertones of being African-American in the U.S., but it didn't bring those themes to fruition. Like, that would have been a really good movie in addition to this interesting character. Instead, the movie is all about the character, not about the interesting cases that this character can bring a different viewpoint to or do justice to, right? And therein for me lies the kind of big
missed opportunity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I found the time frame that the entire story occurs in
very
to be
specific.
Very implausible. It's supposed to be a 3-week period. That was completely implausible to me, like how much happened in that time period.
I also thought, I couldn't for the life of me figure out, is this movie set like in the 70s? Is it set in the 80s? Is it set now? And eventually I figured out it is set in contemporary times.
Yeah.
But you know, he has a Walkman on him. So I figured, you know,
And I think what they were alluding to, and they kept trying to, and maybe there's a lot more in the that's left behind that we don't know. It felt to me like they were alluding to the fact that this is a disturbed, autistic, Asperger's type person who has to wear these headphones to drown out inner voices.
Yeah.
But that didn't come across fully. Again, a lot of themes that emerge, but nothing that fully came to fruition.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think there's it maybe suffers a little bit through its own ambition, because I think you're right. They focused on very weird character tics, and then the big themes of the movie, which you're right, it embarks upon that idea that the justice system is plagued by plea bargaining.
Right.
Right. And that, you know, people are, you know, again, one of the early themes in the movie is that, you know, people will be handed very harsh sentence, threatened with very harsh sentences, and that they would negotiate to something less harsh if they plead guilty and give the, you know, prosecutor a district DA's kind of a win. That's a very interesting theme, and I do wish they had explored that more.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the base of the, at the heart of the movie is this whole, you know, moral changing, of course, that happens in this character, right? He starts off almost being unrealistically idealistic as a character. You know, he's like, you know, he's only working for the poor. He's looking to find, to defend people who nobody else will defend, and so forth. And at one point, he's just left with no choice, you know, and he has to start working, you know, with the law firm of, which is owned by Colin Farrell's character. And you can kind of get a sense of, you know, the systematic corruption of his pure mind and how he eventually kind of does something unthinkable, and, you know, how he kind of, corruption of his soul. And I can see that. I mean, again, Washington's performance was too showy for me to kind of, I mean, it's a very abrupt change. When the change happens, it's very obvious. I saw actually a much, much more subtle change in the Colin Farrell character. Yes. I think Colin Farrell did a remark. I mean, Colin Farrell, what's going on with him? He's on fire, you know, from Beguiled to Killing of a Sacred Deer to this one here. But anyway, and, you know, I really liked, there's some excellent scenes in the movie. I mean, obviously, this is a very talented filmmaker. I mean, there is a great scene where, you know, he gets invited to speak at this, you know, protest group, you know, and how he kind of tries to bring his old world sensibility to it, and he's kind of mocked for it, and so forth. So I think the movie has some really good pieces to it. It just didn't add up. Maybe I just had very high expectations.
Anything else on this one?
No. Do you want me to wrap up?
Yeah.
Sure. So I'm somewhere between a 6 and a 7, but I think I'm going to land on the 6 here because it doesn't quite have the spark it needs to, you know, a 7 is a pretty strong recommendation from us. So 6 out of 10, I think there's much to like about this movie. If you can deal with some of its contrivances, they didn't bother me in the moment. I think now that I sit here with you discussing them, I find myself a little bit more annoyed about some of the missed opportunities. So 6 out of 10, but, you know, one to check out. It'll probably be a future Netflix pick for me. I mean, this is something that I recommend people watch, not necessarily one to run out for this time of year.
Yes, Dee.
Yeah, I think everything you need to know about the movie is in the title of it, Roman J. Israel Esquire. I can't think of a more pretentious title. I mean, I don't even know why Israel, why J. We never find out what the J stands for. And the Esquire seems far too indulgent a thing. You know, at one point he says it's better than a gentleman and less than a knight or something. I don't know. Maybe I have a problem with the title, but I think it's kind of symptomatic of the whole movie, which is very earnest and very well made, but it just somehow, you know, at the end of Nightcrawler, I was just like buzzing that I'd seen something spectacular. At this one, I just was like, okay, it ended, you know, even the way it ended, it's supposed to be a surprise, but I was like, yeah, whatever. 6 out of 10 for me as well. Washington's great, but for me, the biggest undoing was I never bought his character. He just seemed too much of a construct.
Yeah.
6 from me as well. I would say great performances in an average movie that should have been much better.
Yeah. Some incredible shots in the movie, by the way. There's a great shot of the camera going down between skyscrapers, and it goes all the way down to this dumpster, you know, where Washington is waiting for somebody to come and put something in the dumpster. So there's some really good crane shots, overhead shots and so forth. So
you made the interesting point that the movie, because I actually did watch the movie with the genuine belief that it was based on a true story. And it doesn't do anything to say that, but you wonder with a movie that's such a fussy name that must be somebody real. So, all right, moving on then. 3 Billings Outside Ebbing, Missouri. So, Rashmi.
3 billboards.
Did I say 3 Billings? I'm obsessed with Billings.
You're just obsessed with, you're mucking up this title.
You know what? Because it's funny.
You've been to Billings?
No, I did a study 10 years ago, and we had a site in Billings, Montana, and they were a very high performing site. So I always talked about Billings, Montana.
Oh, that makes sense now.
So now okay. I've got the Billings and the Missouri and the Ebbings and the, it's all too much. I can't cope with it.
That is one of my points about this movie.
My simple brain.
The title is horrible.
So
it's,
yes,
it's actually three billboards in Ebbing, Missouri.
Nope. Outside.
Three billboards outside.
Oh, Ebbing, no. Missouri. Okay.
Gosh, we are useless. Thank God we don't announce films for a living.
Okay, so let me introduce this film.
Please.
So, director-writer Martin McDonagh has made two previous movies, which are very high profile. One is probably one of my favorite movies of all time, which is In Bruges. Which, if you haven't seen, you should stop watching this, listening to this podcast, and immediately go find In Bruges. I think it's on Netflix. And then the second movie he made more recently, well, not so recently, about 5 years ago, was Seven Psychopaths, which we also liked. So here he is with this third movie, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. And this is based, again, it's written and directed by Martin McDonagh. And it's based on the premise that...
He actually did one called The Guard as well.
He wrote The Guard. Yes. He's been writing
Brendan
a lot
Gleeson
more.
Movie.
Yes,
which was so
terrific.
Good.
Oh, very terrific.
So good. Yeah. So the premise of three billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri is that a woman played by Frances McDormand has reason to challenge the local authorities to try and solve the crime which was perpetuated on her daughter, which led to her murder. And the lengths that she goes to try and find justice. So on the face of it, it's you can call it almost a revenge movie, but it's more than that. It's written like almost like a darkly comic Coen Brothers-esque movie. And the movie has a fine supporting cast. It includes Sam Rockwell, whom we don't see often enough. Caleb Landry-Jones, who was also in The Florida Project. And Woody Harrelson is here, as is Abby Cornish. So Woody Harrelson plays the lead police detective in the movie, and Abby Cornish plays his wife. And then Lucas Hedges, who we had seen
Lady Bird.
In Lady Bird recently. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we had originally seen him as last year in
Manchester by the Sea
is here as well. And he plays Frances McDormand's son in this movie. So this movie came with a lot of expectation. And anytime Frances McDormand gets to headline a movie is cause for celebration, I think. So what do you guys think about Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri?
So like you, In Bruges and Seven Psychopaths, I mean, Seven Psychopaths was probably my favorite movie of that year. And I really, really love The Guard. And so I was super excited to see this movie, and it's had the weight of expectation, like you said, Yazdi. So I was unfortunately very disappointed by this movie, despite the impeccable acting by both Frances McDormand and Woody Harrelson. For me, it felt too much like a lark, and overall just seemed super implausible. And I feel like if it had been dialed back just a little, this would have been excellent, but it just went over the top. And I just feel like Mr. McDonagh wanted to show off a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Joseph?
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty sure that as a vehicle for McDonagh, Frances McDormand, this is surely going to lead to some sort of celebration.
Totally.
I think she's clearly
Oscar
bound.
I'm putting her on my think list. Yeah.
With this one.
She's Oscar bound.
And I think there's going to be a supporting nominate for Rockwell as well. I think both of them were so incredibly strong in this movie. Harrelson all had really great supporting roles. But I struggled with the movie because I think, you know, despite the fact that it's deeply, darkly comical, every time I was getting settled, it kind of ejected me from that comfort zone, and I found myself thinking, wait, is this drama? Is this comedy? As much as the integrity of the characters was, they behaved in the way that you would expect these characters, I found them kind of hard to cope with. There is some action that, you know, the McDormand character takes, you know, partway through the movie, which is just really at odds with, what I thought the character would do in that situation. And, you know, yes, it's all about a character trying to make a statement. The three billboards are, you know, very much about the character trying to make a statement about an occurrence that has happened in her life. But, you know, the movie just kind of overboils, overcooks.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think the world of Martin McDonagh, I think the world of those two previous movies, and like I said before, I think, you know, Frances McDormand is a goddamn national treasure. And so any opportunity she gets to play, you know, especially in the current environment, you know, to play a role like this is great. And I'd be very happy for her to get nominated for this movie. But, and, you know, to be honest, the movie is, you know, it's fairly tight. It's never boring. It's completely unpredictable. I didn't know where it was going. But it won't make my list of the best movies of the year. And it kind of hurts me because all the ingredients are here. And, you know, there's a very unusual premise here, you know, that of a person who decides to kind of reckon the local authorities by forcing them to respond by buying space on this billboard where she openly calls out the police detective to try and solve the rape and murder of her daughter. It's a great premise, but I think the movie's too eager to be mean, and the movie's too eager to provoke, and every character behaves so contrary to expectation that,
and at the extreme of their bell curve.
At the extreme of every character is at the extreme of their bell curve, you know.
Yeah,
and not to get political about it, but it's oddly unsettling that a British filmmaker makes a movie about small town America where the majority of characters are overtly racist. And I think it's kind of a cheap shot to take at it. I mean, fine, some of them are racist, but the third or fourth time somebody uses the N-word, I'm like, he's just doing this to provoke the audience. And this is just one of many things. Everybody does things, you know, nobody throws somebody out, you know, through the window of a building, you know, and it's just constantly trying to kind of, you know, shock you as an audience member. And I got tired of being shocked. I felt a little manipulated by this movie.
Yeah, and I read that. So I have exactly the same feeling as you, Yossi. And I wrote it down as, I think I read this as tonally inconsistent, but I think it's actually underwritten as a story because it's dealing with police brutality and corruption, a pretty sinister murder that's occurred, small town politics, single parenting, midlife terminal illness, race, and the kitchen sink. Yeah. And so the result is that it doesn't actually have time to breathe and let us enjoy the journey of this movie and the arc of these characters. And we're just rushing to get to a conclusion by being shocked instead of having a narrative that completes the story.
Ultimately, I guess it comes across as very forced and
contrived.
You know, right.
Yeah.
But even ultimately, when we get some revelations around the event that's led the main character to post to the billboards, the contrivance that's inserted for us, for the police to solve, you know, trying to stay away from spoilers, but the contrivance that's inserted that provides the nugget that then propels the story forward is, it's like Scooby-Doo. Really is. It's like there was no ingenuity there. It was just, you know, it felt like a piece of luck. And I think, you know, that's kind of a shame because the movie is quite inventive. I think the premise it sets up is beautiful. And I think McDonagh's eagerness to show some of the bizarre sides of his humor that emerge beautifully in things like Seven Psychopaths and In Bruges.
Yeah.
You know, there's this wit, there's this dry wit that runs through those movies. Didn't sit well with the story here, which is not about some, you know, caper that, you know, kind of occurs and we go along with. It's about a very serious theme of, you know, the death of an individual and a family's response to that. And so the two don't go together.
Yeah. There's some weird things. I mean, it's difficult to talk about a lot of the movie without, because it's so convoluted in terms of how it plays out. But there's some just strange things, like, you know, Woody Harrelson's wife appears to be half his age and she has this weird Australian, I don't know, British accent. I mean, not that that's not possible, but just in this little town, you know, there's no explanation for it. I didn't particularly care for how the whole Woody Harrelson story played out. I didn't care for how the Sam Rockwell
story... That was disappointing to me.
And, you know, again, the movie kind of asks you to say these are flawed people and, you know, aren't we all flawed? And I said, no, these people are more flawed than most of us are. And, you know, God bless, I mean, you know, actors like Sam Rockwell who kind of just by pure, you know, gumption, they're able to keep this character alive because it's written as such a despicable, mean, horribly, vindictively racist person. And against all that, you know, you kind of somehow land up, you know, empathizing with him. So, I don't know, it just seemed too mean.
Yet the Lucas Hedges and the Peter Dinklage characters were delightful to watch.
Yeah,
they were. I mean, if everyone had stayed at that level of the movie, this, I would be saying this is in my top 10.
Yeah.
But the Woody Harrelson story was so over the top. The Sam Rockwell character was like a cartoon character. And again, I think there was something really interesting in terms of how he's parented and the sins of our parents going on there, which would have been very interesting.
Right.
And how she's such a bully and then he ends up being the way he is. That would have been really interesting in this small town America or the Rust Belt or whatever you want to call it. I think there's something very interesting and political about this movie that just gets lost in the crazy.
Yeah.
All right, I can wrap this one up. I was extremely disappointed by this movie and hate the title, despite a phenomenal performance by Frances McDormand and I think Woody Harrelson as well, and great support by Peter Dinklage and Lucas Hedges as well. There's no error that Lucas Hedges has got the recognition he got from Manchester by the Sea. I mean, we saw a great performance in Lady Bird and now another great performance in this movie. I hate to do this. 5 out of 10.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was really disappointed. That's but, you know, surprising. I would give those performances, like Frances McDormand, 9 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm with Rashmi. I think the movie is... I mean, watch this movie because I don't think anybody will be yawning while they're watching.
If you can remember the title.
Right.
If you can. And get to the right cinema.
I think it's being marketed just as 3 billboards, which is probably a smart thing to do.
Yes.
But I think anybody who watches this movie will not be bored and they'll be enthralled and, you know, so forth. So it's not a lazy movie by any chance, but I think it kind of suffers from the sins of the writing, which is a little too much, at least for me. And I'm not necessarily a prude. I'm okay with, you know, really nasty dialogue, but I you know, some of the stuff being said was really mean-spirited. So I'm going to say something which maybe unfairly I said about that Alexander Payne's last movie, the black and white one, Nebraska, where I thought that this filmmaker is not laughing with its characters, it's laughing at them.
Yeah.
And I got the same sense in 3 billboards, is that, you know, this filmmaker is not laughing with them. He's mocking these characters. And it's not good for a writer to mock his own characters. I think only Frances McDormand, Peter Dinklage, and Lucas Hedges come out on top. Everybody else is like this misogynistic, terrible, racist, stupid individual in small town America. And it just, if a small town American person made this, it's fine. But for a, you know, for a
Irish
filmmaker to do it, it kind of didn't sit well with me. 6 out of 10 for me.
Which puts me in the odd position of giving it a 7, the highest score of the three of us, which is surprising. But yeah, I think, you know, this is an off-kilter filmmaker who I think is very good when he inserts this kind of subtle, you know, odd sensibility. You know, he's kind of like a dialed down Coen brothers, but you know, and he has that beautiful sense of humor. I mean, the humor in Bruges comes from, you know, the comedy of errors and the disastrous choices that some of the characters make.
But they're never showy,
right? But I think here he's felt for whatever reason to turn the dial up, which is done on the characters, which, you know, I actually, you know, I'm looking at the note that I sent to the Allied press rep and the publicist for the movie, and yeah, you know, I struggled with you know, the integrity of what were otherwise brilliantly crafted characters. Yeah. And I think, you know, that kind of speaks volumes to exactly what goes wrong here. These are really, really quite well designed characters. Mm-hmm. The Frances McDormand character and the ones that we spoke. But you know, every now and then, in order to get a laugh, in order to kind of, you know, push us off balance, because again, I think the movie does, you know, successfully kind of shove me off my comfortable line from time to time by inserting some line of dialogue or some event or some, you know, action by the characters. And that's off-putting. So,
For the wrong reasons.
And it lacks plausibility. I mean, again, we'll talk about it, perhaps in the future, but you know, there's something that the Frances McDormand character does that I just couldn't believe. I was like, this wouldn't happen. Mm-mm. Given the steps that she's taken so far to bring the attention to the situation, she then, you know, jumps off this cliff. And it's like, where did that come from?
I mean, John Hawkes is in this movie.
Yeah.
We didn't even talk about John Hawkes. What a waste.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
7 out of 10. So, let's wrap the podcast up. It's kind of late in our day here. So, let us know what you thought of these movies. Let us know if you can even say these movies back to back without tripping up over the syllables, like I'm unable to do seemingly. Twitter.com/MovieRollers, Facebook.com/MovieRollers, Instagram.com/MovieRollers, where you can see the rather flatulent little dog that's been sitting here under the table. You guys have got real game faces. This is professional podcasting at its best, because this little character has it's been quite kind of ripe in here.
I was hoping podcast. It wasn't one of you two.
So
rest assured, it wasn't.
thankfully, there's no way to do a smell-o-vision podcast. Yes. Because it would not be pleasant. So thank you for your professionalism. Until our next episode. So, too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.
Today on Movie Rollers, we talk about Roman J. Israel Esquire and Three Billboards Outside of Billings, Montana. No, Ebbing.
Ebbing, Missouri. It's good. It's
3, 2, 1.
You got saddled with the two movies with the most difficult names.
Oh, my word. Okay, let's start that again. 3, 2, 1.